Hello again, everyone. Welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Turning the Pointy Labrador, episode number 134. So in today's episode, we are going to be on the continuing saga, a puppy saga, the story of G. She's 13 weeks old now, and I have some pictures, videos on Facebook, if any of you are Facebook followers on that. But I'll tell you where we are. So the last time I think when I talked to you, I stopped calling them the walk and just started referring to it as the truffle hunt. So she was doing that. And then also on the retrieves, when I would throw something, she would just run out passionately to it, pick it up, look at me, and then head any direction aside from back to me. So all of those are things that I don't care for. Now, the walk, of course, I strongly believe in that. That's such an important training tool. But what was happening on our walks is they became, to her, an exciting, fun hunt. So we are hunting for, obviously, any disgusting thing to eat. And she has what appears to be a very accurate nose because she can find the most amazing things in places that are surprising to me. So she's very efficient at that. But she would hunt disgusting things to eat. Anything that was moving, it could be a leaf, it could be a piece of plastic, it could be a bird, it could be a bunny. So anything that's out there is edible or chaseable. And this, the extreme interest in that was overtaking anything else about the walk. The thing about us being together and sharing this little experience was diminishing, and her ability and intensity about hunting for this stuff and having all the fun was expanding. And so that's not really the dynamic that I want. So when I was showing up wherever she was in her yard or her kennel run or to get her to go do that, the sight of me meant truffle hunting. It meant, good, she's going to make it so I can go do this thing that I love very much. And that also isn't what I want. I don't want, you know, me to be, I'm like the driver to the fraternity party for her. And that's not really what I want. So on that one, for the last, I don't know, 6 days, it's been 6 days since we've done the walk. And of course, I love that. I believe in it. There's so many things to be gotten from that. But I had to stop because of what it was becoming. Again, this wasn't the two of us out there going through nature and learning about each other and all the stuff I so romantically talk about. Again, I was the driver to the fraternity party. And she'd slam the door and run in and we were done. So for a while, I have stopped that. Now, the other thing that was happening on her retrieves, like I told you, was that she was going out and then just doing whatever she wanted. So obviously, I cannot have that. So what I did, and I mentioned this in the last podcast, I believe, is I started with a little choke chain and leash doing some just real basic obedience. Just heel, walk along with me on my left side and sit. Also, just let me know for everybody, sit squarely. Don't let them flop over. And the reason for that is because they're really growing at this age, any dogs this age, the little growth plates and the tendons and the muscles. And so we want things to be as symmetrical as possible just to support a real symmetrical growth, because that's going to be in their best interest, you know, in their very athletic lives that they're going to have. So anyway, heel next to me, sit squarely. If she starts to flop over, I just pick up the skin on her little bottom and set it straight. So I'm just going to never let her do the wrong thing here. So we heel and sit. And in the beginning, like I said, we had a little bit of resistance, but not very much. Not like the wild crocodile fight I had with Naked 2 years ago. She was pretty compliant. And so I've been doing that every day. And the reason I'm doing that isn't because suddenly I need her to heel and sit and we're only going to walk on a leash. It's because what's been going on in her little head, which is how I always look at these guys, is basically we're thinking about the fraternity party and the barbecue, and we're not thinking about studying, doing your homework, and picking up your socks. I mean, she's not focused on some of the things that she really needs to be. So instead of out in the field doing a lot of stuff to her, correcting her, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it out of that place, and I'm just going to work on what's in her head. So the obedience is just to get her to, now you have to pay attention to me for longer than 3 seconds. So when I start this with these little guys, I do it for, in the very beginning, maybe a minute or so, because it's just absolutely new and you know, it's like kind of flabbergasting what this is. Now that we've been doing it for a week, I can probably do it for several minutes. But that is all. Definitely more is not better. I don't want this to become a nagging thing or a boring thing or something she just puts up with. I want it to be something that's new and different, a little challenging, a little hard, but interesting. You know, because when she does make the effort and I let her know, yeah, that's it, good girl, that makes this kind of an intriguing exercise. And I need her to be real mental, you know, because she's got a lot of sophisticated things in her future she needs to do. So she's capable of understanding this kind of mental stuff right now. So I'm working on that. The other thing that I'm working on in a very clear and understandable way is you have to respond to me. When I say sit, your bottom has to go down. When I say heel, you be with me, whether I'm going forwards or this to the left or right or whatever, you have to be there. And then I've also begun here. That's going to be important. And it's just, I'm not trying to get, I just have like a little 6-foot leash if I do this, or at least not very much space. And she's in front of me, facing me, and I just say here, and I back up, bring her to me, and have her sit. Maybe I'll have her come around to my left and heel. But without a lot of talking. It's not like heel, heel, heel. I'll say it once and then she's healing. I'll say sit once and then she's sitting. And when I call her to me, I do it once and then with the leash, with just a little jerk on there, she comes to me. So I might jerk it a couple times when I say it here and then jerk and then stop and sit and then again back up here and jerk and then check it out on the third one. When I say here, does she just sit there? Or is she trying to respond? Because if she is trying to respond, I'm not going to keep putting the pressure on her. So this is a place where you start that kind of thinking right off. When she gives me effort, she isn't going to get any training pressure. When she doesn't give me effort, I will make sure I will enforce whatever it is I'm asking her to do. This is where the clarity and the simplicity really begins. So when you do this, when I do it with her, I have to get very, very mindful. This is a little puppy. What am I teaching? I just want to see if I can get a response on the leash with here. And that's only maybe 2-3 feet away from me. And I just back up and have her sit. I vary it. I make it different. I make sure I'm not just nagging her with all this stuff. And so that's, we're doing that. So I'm getting in her head, just trying to teach her how to respond and think a little bit. She's at a spot where she can do that. Then the other thing on the retrieving, because I was having difficulty with that, is, and this was on the video on Facebook, I had to throw the bumper out and she would go pick it up. And then I would kind of use the long cord to just bring her back. Well, that worked a little bit. And so I tried a few more times, not filmed here, and she tried to pick it up and go the other way. And so I just say here and jerk a little bit, and the bumper goes flying out of her mouth. And I give her a chance to go get it. Well, she stopped going back and getting it. She just came right back to me. So I don't know, was she responding to here and trying to be a good? I don't know what was happening. I just can't really have that. I didn't get upset. So yesterday morning, I went out and before we did the obedience and I threw some happies. She had her long cord on and she'd run out to it and then look at it and then come running back. And she did that twice. So I thought, all right, now I have created a problem. So when I did that, I just got the bumper and I rubbed it on her and rubbed it on her belly and her shoulders. And then I threw it over there and a couple times she'd run over, come back without it. And I just kind of kept playing just like we're just having fun until she picked it up. And then when I called her, she came back. And then I threw it again, and she picked it up, came back. So then I filmed for yesterday. I filmed me throwing it 2 times, where she actually ran out, picked it up, came back on her own without, she had the long rope on, but I didn't have to use it. And so she came back. So we have the beginnings now of retrieving being something that I would like it to be. So I am not going to do the big I'm not going to go right back out in the field and start throwing stuff and seeing what she does. So for several days in a row, I'm going to just out in the yard, I'm just going to throw some bumpers. She's going to have her long cord on. And if we make this habitual where she comes back to me with it, then I will next week sometime maybe try throwing one where, you know, it's far out there and see what she does with a little more distance or a little more challenge to it. So I'm just having to be real careful. So I don't know if I messed up or whether that's just how she thinks about all this stuff. It doesn't matter, but because I've gotten to where I need to be. So with regards to the walk, because again, it's a fraternity party for her with lots of beer and lots of fun and, you know, just that's all it is. We're not going to do it when we start up again, which I probably will do this weekend. We're going to go on a walk, and to all you cord guys that I always say, don't use them, you win on this one, because we're going to go out there with a cord. And it's going to be kind of a pain in the neck, but she's a strong little thing. So we're just going to take a walk with that cord, which is going to give her, I'm not going to be holding on to it, but what it does is give her something to think about, something that she has to be aware of other than, oh, I'm going to run around and chase this thing. So, and also I have a means if she is doing something and not paying attention, I can go step on the end of the cord and address the situation. And she knows what here means or whatever. But I'm just going to let her drag that and just see. That's the first thing I have to do. Instead of just overdriving the situation, I'm going to let her drag that because that'll remind her that I'm there. And then we'll take a walk, not through too much heavy stuff where she get caught up in something. And just see whether we're a little more redirected toward the teamwork thing or what. I'm going to make a pretty strong guess that it's going to be more of a teamwork thing. And so then when we can go back out and remain associated with each other, I still can't stop her from eating something if she encounters it. And I'm not even going to try. But at least I have that dog's mind aware that we're out there together and this is somewhat of a teamwork thing. And then if that works, then I'll have her drag maybe a 6-foot cord instead of the longer one. And just see. And when we once again reestablish the teamwork stuff, maybe then I can just take it all off and we can go do our walk again. We'll see. So that's where I am with G right now. And that's a lot. I realize, you know, probably people don't think about it that much. But since this is what I do for a living, I think about it a whole lot. And I'm just trying to keep her ready for what's coming. So speaking of that, I want to talk about a few more things on people and dogs in general and problem prevention. I noticed something. I had some visitors over a couple days ago, and everybody wants to see G. So I get her out, and she runs, very social, of course, runs over to see everybody. And then they reach down. Everybody knows, don't let the dog jump on you. She didn't like that. So everybody reaches down to pet her, and then she flops over on her back and then gets the belly rub. Oh, and she has figured out that that's what everyone does, except me. That's what everybody does. So she just loves to go see new people and then flop over so that she can get a belly rub. Now, I've gotten many, many dogs in for training where the owners say, oh, little Fluffy here really likes belly rubs. So that's always what happens is, you know, they get lots of belly rubs. And what I have to do when I get these dogs, because whenever they are happy to see you, whenever they are unsure or a little bit unnerved by some new request, you know, whether you're making them do obedience or making them sit, they kind of default to the don't you love me and flop over on their back. And so I have to teach them, all right, we're past that. We're not, yes, I love you to death. You still have to be upright and on all four feet. So when I work with G after she's had done the belly flop with everybody, I'll put the leash on and we're going to go work. And then she flops over on her back, in which case she immediately flops back up on her four feet and we keep going. So I just caution people. I understand why everybody does it. And goodness, dogs love that. But it's not very long in their life where that becomes sometimes something they use to avoid work they don't want to do. You know, oh, are you sure you don't love me a little bit? So even with her, you know, the belly rubbing, flopping thing isn't going to happen. You know, if we're sitting together on the floor, you know, then I'll touch her and I don't care whether she's on her back or whatever. But using that kind of physical action, it sometimes puts the dog back in control. So I'll just caution people a little bit about that. Of course, the jumping up thing, and I'm going to revisit that because every new dog I've gotten in this month is a really a bad jumper. And it's not very hard to solve for me, but and I just do it with basic obedience. I give them something else to think about besides putting their feet up on me. And so I would just throw this out for people with puppies. I don't want G to jump on me ever, and she never does now. I mean, I can let her out of wherever she is, and she walks alongside me. There is no foot on me. That didn't take very long to learn. But it's important now in all of her life, you know, when we do love stuff, we absolutely do. But I always go to her, and she always has to have her feet on the ground. And I would just encourage people to think about that. Feet up on you. Is people tolerate that in a little puppy because it's just a little puppy? But when you do that, and they start to be not little puppies, but bigger dogs, then all of a sudden it becomes a problem and you change all the rules. Much easier if you just don't let them do that. But if you do have a dog that really is a paw up kind of a dog, instead of having the get down command, because if you have a get down command, that means you have a get up action. I've said this a lot. So one of the things I suggest with people is, get this sit thing going. And yes, with those pointing dogs, get these sit things going. And so that when a dog looks like it's going to do the foot thing, then you can go ahead and enforce the sit command and you replace one kind of action with another kind of action. And if you do that consistently and you know, seriously enough, then you can actually get rid of the jump up on people thing. Another aspect that's going to become important down the road with little dogs too is the mouth issues, because you know, a lot of people never have them, and then a lot of times you hear about it being a real problem. It's good to pay attention, just like with G right now. I think I've mentioned it before. She likes to play a lot, and she likes to. If I didn't raise this dog, I would already be blaming her owner. Except I've raised the dog. So I can't do that. She likes to kind of hold on to stuff and wants to make a game out of which one of you gets it. And no one taught her that. So it's just kind of how she is. So one, I don't ever, to prevent any future mouth problems, because she's that way, right? I let her come back and if I can, she has to sit down. I have to get physical control of her so that I can just put my hand on her upper jaw, or upper, you know, on her jaws there, the upper part by her nose, and just open it up and take it out without a fight. And then now that she's been bringing it back, she brings it back and kind of hands it to me on the run. And so I will take that. But I would just caution people to be aware of what the dog does with their mouth. And if they chomp down and don't let you have it, one, don't get in a fight. Certainly don't pull. And definitely don't start, you know, yelling your drop or whatever command you have for release. I would just take control of the situation and just say, you know, whatever you want to say to take it out, and just take it out. Be careful about making mouth things issues, because in most dogs, they show their stress and the reaction to what's going on in their life two ways: through their digestive tract and then through their mouth. If you ever see dogs that are in a new situation, and a lot of times they'll drool. And that's one of the ways that they show anxiety. And anxiety does come out in the mouth. So if you make the mouth be a big deal, if you get into fights with it and you obsess with that, it can sometimes not be good. Later on in more advanced things, when there's been misunderstood pressure in dog training, which is not uncommon at all, usually the dog can't tell you, hey, you're doing this or that to me. I don't understand. This seems really mean. What they do is it comes out in their jaw, and they might clamp down, or they might not hold on to things at all. They may carry it hanging from one tooth in their lip. There's a lot of places where they show you what they think about this. And so make sure you don't generate any problems at this age with the mouthing, and make sure that you continue real consistently with what your demands are on that kind of thing. I would also caution some people. I recently got a dog in where the dog is supposed to drop it when they come to you. And I'm going to have to change that, but that won't be very hard because you really don't want them to drop your bird in the mud, especially if it's not dead. So the dropping prematurely sometimes can backfire on you. But the other thing is, a lot of people will just let them carry it around. And I would be careful about that. Sometimes that'll be okay. And sometimes it teaches dogs that whatever's in their mouth is theirs and that they can do with it what they wish. Not all dogs, but sometimes. And G's a little bit that way. She likes to take things and just take them off. Which is why I just stopped that altogether, because there's only one thing, the stuff she retrieves. It goes from where she gets it into my hands. And so I don't let her parade around. She would love that. And, you know, people sometimes do that thinking, well, this will teach them hold. And it might, but it's basically also teaching them that they can do whatever they want on this kind of thing. So, and now let's go on to another one. Retrieving. Now, retrievers retrieve, and it seems a lot real simple, but I'll tell you, a lot of times if you watch with little puppies, they tell you a lot about how they look at this and what they think of it. For G, it was just a game, right? It was just a fun game. So I just had to take that out of it, because she's, you know, doing obedience, and we just have to have it where retrieving is becoming a very serious thing that she loves. That's her job. So right around this time, she's 13 weeks old. So we're getting close to 4 or 5 months here, and I'm going to slowly start making it a more serious thing. So I'm going to, now that I have her, it appears that I have her going out and coming back with it, right? I'm going to just hold on to her. I'm going to be right there next to her at my side. I'm going to have her sit, throw it, and then send her. You know, I might send her while it's in the air or on the ground, but I'm beginning to teach now that concept of you go when I send you. Now, I don't think every retrieve should be that way. I like the happies. You know, before we go do obedience, I like to just throw a couple bumpers out there to get them into a real good state of mind. But when we are starting to develop the retrieve, one of the first things that's kind of easy to do is to have them sit and then watch something go down and then go get it. So there's a couple key parts on this that maybe some people have never thought of. A couple things. One, I'm going to talk about the sit. So when I have little G sit, I'm not going to tell her to sit and stand a few feet away and throw it so she can wiggle and maybe stand up and maybe break and do all this kind of stuff. When I tell her to sit, I am right there with my hand literally on her collar or on her withers and on her little bottom. And she isn't going to move at all from right now at 13 weeks. She can go when I send her, and I might send her different, you know, again, when it's in the air or maybe on the ground or maybe a second or two afterwards, I will vary that somewhat. But sit when you're going to retrieve means sit and don't move. And this is the time, folks with wigglers, this is the time to begin to create that response in them. When you retrieve, you sit and you don't move. And then you go and I send you. So that's one real important thing. When they get a little bit bigger, you can hold onto the leash and gently put your foot on their tail to just make sure the bottom stays down. Some dogs have a little trouble with that, but most dogs, you can have them do it. It's just like, don't move. That way you can be upright, keep them in place, and still throw that thing pretty well when they get a little bit bigger. But they need to know this is the place to teach them sit and don't move. Anyone that's going to compete or going to be in a duck blind or anything where they just need to sit there calmly, this is where we begin it. We don't require full out perfection, but we're beginning to teach that concept. The other thing that we want to teach at this time is to get them to completely use their eyes. Now, a lot of these guys, I know they're like fanatic wigglers. It's almost impossible to hold them. If you have one of those, then use both hands, one down on their rump on the skin and one up on their withers on the skin, and have someone else throw that for you. Any member of the family, a 3-year-old could throw something for you. Have them throw that so that you keep that dog in place. And then they need to learn to watch the trajectory of this thing and focus on where it lands instead of just going nutso crazy. So if you have a nutso crazy dog, now's better time than when they're bigger and stronger and more powerful. Have them watch their trajectory. Make sure that it's out there away from you guys, and that it's not right next to, if your 3-year-old throws it, have them do it from sitting on something so the puppy doesn't just run to them. But have somebody throw it so that it's distant, so we're not related to the runner, to the thrower. The thrower can even be kind of near you and throw out in front of you and then just disappear behind you so that they don't, you know, run out to your gunner. Your gunner needs to be not the focus. It needs to be whatever you're throwing. So there's a lot of ways to do that. I wrote that up extensively in the book. But if you have someone throwing for you, they're not too far from you. They throw out in front and then they disappear behind you before the dog turns around with it. What you're working on is the dog's focus on this thing. Because the more they learn to watch and stay on that, the better they're going to be at marking those things. And marking is a talent and a skill. So dogs have a certain innate ability. Some are amazing, some less amazing, but that can be honed and refined. And you want to start right now by getting them to focus on that. We're not working on steadiness. We are requiring them to be steady, but we're literally holding them there. We're not requiring that they do it themselves. We're holding them there. And if you have to throw again, let's just say you're holding on your little puppy. I'm holding on to G. And somebody throws it and she looks at me and tries to wriggle and get out. What I'm going to do is ask them to pick it up, go pick it up again, bring it back, stand where they were. And I'm going to wait until G watches this thing. And she's going to learn that's the only way you get it is if you watch it. This is not a fraternity party. Woo, just run around all crazy till you happen onto something. So she's old enough now she can watch this thing go down. And if it doesn't work, they can pick it up, go back, and throw it again, and then just disappear behind me. It's not about the thrower. It's about what's being thrown. And this takes time. It's not like in 2 days you should have that. Some dogs are funny. They'll just sit there and be very calm. And other dogs act like they're just just nuts. So whichever you have, you know, if it's a nuts dog, it may take a little bit longer. And you just hold on to it and keep it there until they learn to focus and watch. And once you get a dog that will do that, now we can make them sit there just a little bit longer. Don't be working on, you know, look, I can keep them there for 10 seconds. And don't be far away from them so that, whoops, they can slip away and break on you. Be right there. There's no downsides to that. When they do that, now you can start adding some challenge to these things. And there's a whole lot of different ways to add challenge to this stuff. You know, you can, distance is one thing. The out of sightness of wherever it lands is another thing. The stuff they have to go through to get to it is another thing. You know, wind direction is a major, that the wind is their data gathering. So that's what they use. So there's a lot of elements to this, but what we puppy trainers are doing right now is teaching them to be calm and focus on what their job is, to stay focused on that job and to watch it. And then to focus on where that thing went down and then go to that area, or at least where they think it is, and put up a good hunt. And if for any reason, if you have a good thrower that's helping you, and I hope you do, let's say they go out to, they're just a little short, or they're long, or they're to the side of wherever it landed, and then they start just running back to you, whoever threw that, throw another one to the same spot. Get them back out there. You don't ever want to teach a little dog that if you can't find it, come back, we'll try it again. Just, that's nothing. There's no good side to that. So if it's just you throwing and they start coming back, toss another one out there so that you begin to set up that thing. You go out and you stay out there until you find it. And all of those things can be taught right now. And a lot of that is what's happening. at this age. Now, the return, if they get back to you, it'd be really nice if they came back to you and it could go from their mouth into your hand, whether they're doing it willingly or because you're requiring that they do it. Put that stuff behind you, set them down for the next one. And don't throw the same place over and over, because then you're teaching them just always go back to the same place. If things are going well, throw it in a different place every time. So that's what they learn, to just focus. So this focus stuff that I'm talking about on the retrieves, where you begin to install that into a little dog brain, is on that basic obedience stuff that I talked about. That's another reason that I've started to do that with G, is because I need her little brain that's never focused on anything besides the fraternity party and dinner. Is now you got to focus on what I'm saying and what we're doing. And it's most easily started and worked on in just the little fundamentals of basic obedience: heel and sit and hear. And they're little puppies, so it's real easy. You have total mechanical advantage. You can make them sit every time. You can make them heel every time. You can make them come to you every single time. And do it on an upbeat way, because understand this is a new thing for them. But do it, don't bore them and nag and do the same thing all the time. Make it kind of interesting, just as if you were learning that. But that's the key thing right now, is to start that head on the focus and the intensity, because it's going to pay off in all these other places that you're working on. And hopefully, if I can get those skids greased inside of our head, when we go back out on the walk, we'll have a little bit more of a we're doing this together and it's not just a fraternity party. So that's going to be today's, a little bit shorter, half hour. There's a lot to this puppy stuff. There is a lot. If you want it to be, you can always just have fun with them and let them jump on you and roll on their backs and do whatever. But I have found that this is an optimal time to get those dogs thinking about things the way that's going to be really useful, and teach them how to, even at this age, begin to master the world that they live in. Every animal in the world loves that. So that's today's offering. I hope everybody's staying warm and okay and having a good 2021. And I will be back with more film and more stories about the saga of Sturdy Girl G.